This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Come on over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on. Yes, I say, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking. Whole lot of shaking going on. Well, I say, come on over, baby. We got chicken in the corner.
Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Jerry Lee Lewis, I can't think of a better guy to sing and wake you up in the morning so you can listen. We are Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. I am indeed Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us on this Monday, February the 5th already. My goodness, we are here, by the way, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Please tell your friends. Hey, tell your neighbors, too, and your in-laws, and your outlaws. Tell everybody about our show. We want them to get a chance to listen to us as well. In a few minutes, Michelle Minton will join us. She of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we're going to talk about, in light of the Super Bowl yesterday, about betting on the Super Bowl. You know, it's not legal in most states. And we are going to talk on whether or not all sports betting should be legal. So stay tuned for it. And Donald Trump blasting Democrat Adam Schiff. He called him a liar and a leaker. And meanwhile, the Congress is in standoff mode on the budget and another possible government shakedown. We're going to talk about both of those things. And we're going to do a campus quackery. This morning, another segment, we are going to travel to John Jay College in New York City. So stay tuned for that. And finally, the Super Bowl having been held yesterday, in our ultimate top 10, what are the top 10 biggest underdogs to win the Super Bowl? We got them. Do you think Philly winning yesterday was one of them? You'll find out. By the way, go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com, where you can listen to our show. And at your leisure, anytime, listen to any of our shows. Big Ed has put all of our shows on that website. There's a podcast page. You can go to it. ourfreedomworks.com. Well, we're going to be talking with Big Ed a little bit later on the Super Bowl itself. I want to talk about the celebration, or would you call it a celebration in downtown Philadelphia? You can imagine what went on. And I guess since they have not won a championship since 1960, you can't blame people for coming out and trying to celebrate. However, as you can also imagine, damage occurred. I think Macy's had one of their stores' windows broken. People were climbing light poles and jumping. Three people fell to the ground from light poles and lost consciousness. I mean, you know the deal. Anytime some city wins a championship, you get a whole bunch of people going downtown. Probably most of them didn't watch the game. They just want to cause trouble. They just want to have fun. They want to break windows. It's an excuse to be a vandal. What is it in people's souls that make them want to do that? Is it a dislike of other people that are that have businesses? Why do people go into a downtown area and overturn cars? They just want to make other people feel bad? Is that it? In other words, do they get a gratification out of hurting other people? You know what it really is, in my opinion? It's a self-dislike. They don't like themselves, and they're lashing out about it. They feel they're in some way, shape, or form, they feel they are not worthy. I think all backlashing towards other innocent people, if you will, stems from that. And so it was on display in Philadelphia. Now, I watched the game. It was very exciting. But there were other people that were innocent that were out there with kids. First of all, don't go downtown to one of those uncontrolled celebrations with your kids. That's stupid. Don't you think? Also, you know, we talk about the government running things that it shouldn't run. One of the things it shouldn't run is trains. Now, it's not running the plane industry. They're controlled by these private companies, United and American and Southwest and all of those, you know. And what's their track record? It's actually almost perfect, isn't it? They never have any, nobody's being killed in commercial passenger flights in this country. It's amazing. If you think about it, it's really amazing at how well that system is run. But not so much on trains. An Amtrak passenger train that was diverted onto a side track slammed into a parked CSX freight yesterday in South Carolina. Two dead, hundreds injured. Now, it wasn't the CSX, which is a private company, wasn't their fault. It was the Amtrak, which is run by the federal government. Why is Amtrak, by the way, did you know that was the third crash that they've had since December, the third one? Do you think that the federal government should be running trains? You know, if you had the private sector running the trains, as they should, did you know that the trains would be safer, the ticket would be cheaper, the accommodation in the train would be better, people would be happier, and the conductor and the engineer and everybody else would be better? That's just the way it works in the private sector. So in this case, the engineer and the conductor were killed. I don't know if they were going too fast. But, I mean, come on. When are we going to... And by the way, the other thing about the Amtrak, think of the money that the that you and I spend on it. It's taxpayer-funded. So, you know, it's one more thing. When I see these things with the federal government, you know, it's one more reason why we should allow the federal government to do the only the things it was intended to do when it was formed. And there's only a handful of things. One of them is not running a train company. Another is not running our health care. All kinds of other things. Okay. Anyway, we're going to take our break. Now, when we come back, our buddy Michelle Minton will join us, and we are going to talk about whether or not you should be allowed to bet on the Super Bowl and other games without going to jail.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi there, I'm Dr. John.
And I'm Dr. Lisa.
Do you have medical questions you never get to ask?
Now you can ask us.
After many years of caring for children and families, we've learned that the best informed families are also the healthiest.
Are you saying knowledge is power, Dr. John?
I am, Dr. Lisa, and since you're the smart one, I hope you'll share some knowledge with me and our listeners.
Let's do this then.
Okay, we hope you'll join us every Monday at noon right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network for the Drs. John and Lisa Show.
Listen online at tantalk1340.com.
Hi, this is Tim Del Toro.
And I'm Lou Angel Wolf, and we are the Grease Gurus.
Our show is broadcast every Saturday morning live at WTAN, Tan Talk Radio, 1340.
That's 10 o'clock every Saturday morning for an automotive forum that is flavored with humor and insight.
We encourage you to call in and be part of the Grease Gurus show.
We'd love to have you, and we will certainly help you find your inner grease.
This show is sponsored by Tim's Performance Service Center in beautiful Tarpon Springs at 906 Verona Place, and you can reach us personally at 727-543-1601.
Aha.
Hello, this is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. Again this winter, some 4 million Canadians are spending vacation time in Florida. And each day, they're continuing a 63-year tradition, tuning in Canada Calling on radio. They're up-to-the-minute news from home at 9 a.m. and 12 noon here on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Join us on WTAN AM 1340 and FM 106.1, WDCF AM 1350, and WZHR AM 1400 and FM 104.3.
A team and its fans feed off one another.
Here's Stamkos getting to the puck, cuts in.
Your energy inspires effort, and the team does its best to return the favor. Moment by moment, the cycle continues, with each electrifying outburst providing the inspiration for the next. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Thunder.
February 8th, Lightning versus Canucks, 7:30 p.m. Tickets at TampaBayLightning.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on a post-Super Bowl Monday. And I don't know how many people bet on the Super Bowl, but it's probably the single biggest betting game. Well, for sure in the country, possibly in the world. I'm not sure. But we've got Michelle Minton, our buddy from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, to talk with us about it. She specializes in consumer policy. It covers things like gambling, alcohol, and food, my three favorite vices. Michelle, welcome back.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're always, you know, Michelle, you and I talked about this issue sometime back. But you've come up with a little bit of updated information, and that is that there is now a possibility that a law in Congress that was enacted in 1992, the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, is going to be taken a look at by the Supreme Court. Tell us about that.
Yes, so the Supreme Court actually heard arguments in December from New Jersey. They claim that this law that makes it illegal for New Jersey and pretty much every other state except for Nevada to legalize sports betting is unconstitutional, which they are correct about. I agree.
Yes.
And it sounds like quite a few of the justices were very sympathetic to New Jersey's argument. So we won't find out till spring or summer. The court makes its decision, but the court, you know, there's a good chance, you know, if you're going to put money on it, there's pretty good odds that the Supreme Court might just overturn the laws, unconstitutional.
I wonder if there's odds in Las Vegas on whether the Supreme Court is going to overturn this. Now,
yeah, I know.
You know, if they do, I mean, what does that do to Las Vegas or even Atlantic City or, you know, any of these places that where there's a lot of gambling? Do you think it will actually hurt places like Las Vegas? Do you think it would increase gambling there, or other states will pick up the ball? I mean, what do you see if you look in your crystal ball as what would happen?
Oh, Atlantic City is dying to have sports betting. They want it so bad. Sports betting is, oh, it's been illegal, and the purpose of it, the leagues wanted it to be illegal because they were worried fans would think games were fixed if they knew there was betting on the game. Mm-hmm. Back in '92, the betting on sports back in '92 was $40 billion a year. Now it's something like $400 billion a year.
Really?
It being illegal.
Wow. We're having a little.
And broadcasters are talking about the betting lines and odds. They know people are gambling.
Michelle, just so you know, you're coming a little bit in and out, so we missed a little bit of what you just said, but I think you mentioned the extensive amount of money that is spent on gambling. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. Can you hear me okay now?
I think we can. Yeah, you've been cutting in and out a little bit. I know maybe that is a little flaw on our side, for which we apologize, but you had said, now this was something you wrote, and it's very prescient. And for those of you that don't know what that means, it means, it means I think that you were looking into the future with a great deal of correctness. You said Congress should not wait for the courts to fix this critical error. Well, it's probably going to wait, right?
Yeah, I think Congress is going to sit on its hands to see what the court does. But I don't think they should. It's their mistake. They made it in the 90s. Should fix it.
Yes. And now we had the Super Bowl yesterday. I don't know how much money was spent on it. You know, most people just do fun bets among their friends and family and stuff like that. But I don't even know that you can stop gambling. It wouldn't make any difference what the Supreme Court does. I mean, we've got the online gambling. You and I have talked about online gambling. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the fact that how do you stop somebody? How really can you? Because you can't regulate every computer. How do you do that? I mean, it would seem to me that the sheer weight of gambling would almost force the Supreme Court into allowing it, just on practical terms. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Supreme Court won't make a decision based on what people are going to do or, you know, what's practical. They just have to look at the Constitution. But with any prohibition, whether it's gambling, drugs, whatever it is, never works. Not a single time in history has a prohibition ever actually stopped people from doing a thing. All it does is turn normal people into criminals and put them into really dangerous situations.
Yeah, exactly. And I always think, you know, when people are, let's say people are sitting around a table in somebody's house playing cards. Mm-hmm. I have never heard of the police breaking in on some innocent card game. I don't care how much money was on the table. They got better things to do. And again, it's one of those things, and as a libertarian to some extent, you know, obviously, I cannot understand why you try to force people from enjoying something as long as it's not hurting anybody else. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just what this is. Kind of like drinking, right? Or smoking. Any of these things. You just can't. I mean, children are a different story, and we do understand that. But when they get to be a certain age, they used to say, you're free, white, and 21. But you're not going to stop that kind of thing from occurring. So do you think there would be much of any opposition when the Supreme Court takes this up, if indeed they do, by any of those justices?
No, absolutely not. When the court case first came around, a bunch of states got together, the attorneys general, and they wrote a letter telling the court, you know, basically we want the federal government to get out of the way. And one of those states included Utah. Utah does not want sports gambling to be legalized, but they want the chance to, you know, have their own say. They don't want the federal government to tell them not to do it. They want to make that decision themselves. And the thing about this ban it's a bigger affront than, like, the government saying, we want to make you healthier, we want to protect you. That's not what they're doing in this case. It was a sports league saying, we want to protect our own reputation because we're worried that if there's legal betting, people will think the games are fixed. And these are profit-earning sports gambling, profit-earning leagues that make billions of dollars every year. And for some reason, the American taxpayer has to pay the cost of protecting their reputation.
Right. We're talking with Michelle Menton. She is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and she specializes in gambling, alcohol, and food. Now, she doesn't really specialize in doing them, but she probably does eat sometimes, and I bet she gambled. Maybe you took a – did you take a drink again, Michelle?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Just some water.
Good for you. Good for you. Now, you know, the history of gambling, and maybe this is part of this act currently on the books, was that games could be fixed. But that was kind of back in a time when the athletes weren't paid very much. And you and I both talked about the 1919 Chicago mm-hmm. White Sox, which indeed a bunch of players did. They threw the World Series. And that was a time when regulation had to occur. Now, this was one of the arguments, apparently, that allowed passage of the Professional Amateur Sports Protection Act, PASPA. I don't think it holds anymore, do you?
It didn't even hold back then. The sports, the bookies who were taking bets, if anybody had been listening to them, they would have known that the game was fixed before the first pitch was ever thrown. Because bookies can see when betting lines shift in a really weird way.
Oh,
all of a
yeah.
sudden, the underdog swings to the favorite, and there's no explanation for why that would be. They know some fishy's going on. And in Europe, in other countries where sports betting has been legal for the last couple of decades, the league authorities actually work with the gambling industry, which alerts them when something looks weird. When you say, you know, betting on this one game or this one athlete is really odd, so you should probably investigate it.
Yeah, and another reason why I don't think they would do it is athletes are all multimillionaires in the big sports that would be bet on anyway. Although I know in college, you know, with referees and things like some of those people where a game could be influenced. I can see where you would be have to be careful. But like you're saying, a betting odds would swing because you're saying that the odds makers would be onto something, huh? Interesting, interesting. So when do you think this will come up before the Supreme Court? Do you figure it will indeed show up later this year?
Well, yes. Yeah, so the Supreme Court already agreed to hear the case, and they heard arguments from New Jersey in December, last December. So they're going to make a decision in the next 6 months or so.
Okay.
We'll hear from the court. And hopefully they don't just say, you know, we're not going to make a decision. That's an option. They could literally just not make a decision on it. But I'm pretty hopeful after listening to the questions. It's a fool's errand to try and really prognosticate about what the justices are going to do based on the questions they ask in arguments. But it really seemed like a large number of the justices were leaning in New Jersey's favor.
So this would allow, if this thing is overturned, this would allow each state to set up their own laws, correct?
Yes, if they wanted to. It would allow states to decide if they want to legalize it, if they don't want to do anything, or if they want to regulate it and tax it.
And could a state say, like Utah, say, we don't want you to gamble at all? That's a law here. You can't gamble if we catch you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Can they do that?
They sure can, and it won't do a lick of good.
No, it won't.
We're going to keep doing it anyway.
But, I know.
You know, that would be their right to say.
Okay.
We are going, because the Constitution allows for the states to make those kinds of bans if they want to have it. The federal government could even say, we want to ban sports gambling for everybody. But that's not what they did in this case. Instead, they said, state legislatures, you have to ban it, which that's unconstitutional. You can't, you know, make a state legislature your puppet and tell them what to do.
You know, there's already gambling going on in most of the states, right, with the lotto? I mean, they've already got it going on anyway. Your odds are even worse there, right?
Every state except for Hawaii, even Utah, has some form of gambling, because I consider bingo to be a form of gambling.
Sure,
so every state except for Hawaii.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If you pay money to play a game,
yep.
to win money, that's gambling. So
yep.
why the hypocrisy? Is it indeed because there is a real fear of throwing games? I mean, is that really what you think it is?
For some people it isn't, and in particular for the non-professional sports, you know, for college athletes, for example, because they are the most at risk of potentially
being thrown.
Corrupt by, but the reason is because they don't get paid anything.
No, they don't.
That I say, NCAA, you make several $1 billion a year. Maybe you should pay your players something.
Well, that's an interesting argument. I can see both sides of the coin on that one, too. I would think the referees, you know, in basketball, even in the pros,
mm-hmm.
and we've had some refs in the pros.
Yep.
Yeah, so, you know, they can be reached. They're not making a $50 million a year. But it's like you say, I mean, people would catch on. I mean, with television, you watch a referee miss an obvious call,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, the guy's on all, he's displayed across the country doing it. So, you know, it's very interesting.
Yeah, and it's,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. It's not just that it's, okay, yes, that it's possible. It's always possible that this could happen for whatever reason. But even if it's not money, it could be blackmail. That could happen.
That could.
But it's up to the leagues, because it's up to the leagues and the bookies, really, to tell people about it, to warn people. It's their job, because their money is on the line. If fans start saying, well, this game is fixed, I'm not interested in watching it, and then these private profit-earning businesses lose money because of it.
Yeah.
It's their job to monitor it. It's their job to educate their players. Their job to institute rules that disincentivize players or officials from engaging in that kind of behavior. It shouldn't be on the American people. It shouldn't be on our state legislatures to enforce the perfect environment for their profit-earning business.
Makes good sense. I can't wait, actually, for the ruling, because if you're right, and it's like, you know, 7-2 or 9-0 or something, all of a sudden, all these states are going to have this thing dropped in their lap. And, you know, what are they going to do? What gambling are they going to allow, you know, and with the sports? I just wonder. It'll be interesting to see how it, you know, how it changes the environment. Do you think it would radically change the environment?
I don't know about the environment, but 15 states have already passed legislation. They're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as the federal government gets out of the way, 15 states are pretty much going to start taking bets right away.
Wow.
Which will be, it'll be amazing. What I'll be really curious to see is how many people actually leave the black market and come to the legal market.
Yes.
It depends on how the states do it, how much taxes they put on the legal bookies. So, because, if you put too much taxes on legal bookies, they can't offer the same odds and as good a payouts as maybe the black market could. So
that's true, too.
Be really interesting to see the shift from the black to the legal market.
Yeah, it's kind of like the drugs when they started legalizing the drugs in the different states, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they put
exactly.
you wonder if your local drug dealer down the street was still in business, or was he competing with the legal things?
Yeah, and that's one of the arguments is that if these legal options can compete well, that will make the black market smaller, and that in and of itself, because there'll be less money on the market, will make it less possible to corrupt players or officials. They won't have as much money to do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, Michelle, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. I thank you so much, and I know we'll be talking more about this, especially when the Supreme Court makes its ruling. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, dear. Michelle Minton. Always fun to talk with Michelle. We've had her on probably as much as anybody over the years. Okay, we are going to take our break. And when we come back, Donald Trump, he's blasting this guy Adam Schiff. He's calling him a leaker and a liar. Let's talk about that.
Oh, honey, honey.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, you.
Who, me?
Not you, the hot one.
Hi, what can I do for you?
Aren't you that lady that's on that radio show called The Ameritech Connection?
Why, yes, I am. We're live every Thursday at 5 p.m. on Tantalk Radio Network. Right, Mike?
That's right, Sharon. Live in a condo or homeowners association? You have issues. How about questions? We cover it all and more. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m.
What time again?
That's 5 p.m. every Thursday on Tantalk Radio Network, 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time, sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why not you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars, old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show, GoBowlingShow.com.
Hello out there. Tune in every Saturday at noon on Tan Talk for Connecting Caregivers with me, Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers. Every Saturday at noon, we will find resources, education, and a shoulder for the caregivers. I know it's tough, but we can work it out together. Look forward to you tuning in on Saturdays at noon, where you'll have tons of information. Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Thank you for being with us on Freedom Works. We really do appreciate it. Well, we got two things going on right now in Washington, don't we? We got the memo and the investigation into Russian collusion, and we also have something coming up again, which is a possible government shutdown. You wouldn't know it from all the talk about the memo, but Congress is returning this week and is facing a shrinking window for getting a deal on federal spending and the debt. They didn't pass a budget. They continued the old budget. It's called a continuing resolution. But they have got an expiration date, and it's coming up on the resolution. Then we run out of money again for the government. Now, apparently this whole fiasco with our government funding is being connected to immigration. And the Democrats will apparently not agree to continue funding the government unless something is being done about immigration. That will not work again. That's what they tried to use in this last government shutdown, right? Didn't work. Made them look bad. Made Schumer look bad. Schumer being the Senate minority leader for the Democrats. So here we go again. And whether or not this whole thing is going to grind to a halt, I'm trying to see if it's the end of this week, but it is coming up soon for the government shutdown. Paul Ryan, who was the Speaker of the House, said that while both Democrats and Republicans were making progress on a budget agreement, he said another temporary spending bill would be necessary to keep the damn lights on in Washington. He didn't say damn, I did. I don't think that they're going to try to, they're going to end up shutting the government down again. It's going to make the Democrats look bad. But Mitch McConnell, who's the Senate Majority Leader, he said he doesn't expect another shutdown. We'll see where all of that goes. Now, in the meantime, this guy Adam Schiff is getting under my skin. Under my skin and on my nerves. He apparently is hoping to run for higher office, as in presidency or vice presidency or something bigger than what he is right now. And it turns out that, you know, all these leaks that are coming out in this Russian thing, that Schiff is one of the guys that apparently has been running over and doing it right away. Devin Nunez says that there's been almost 100 leaks. Almost 100 leaks from the committee that he chairs, the Judiciary, the Oversight, I mean, the Oversight House Oversight Committee, and almost all of them have come from the Democrats. So here's what Trump says. Little Adam Schiff, who's desperate to run for higher office, is one of the biggest liars and leakers in Washington, right up there with Comey, Warner, Brennan, and Clapper. Remember Comey, Warner, Brennan, and Clapper? Was that? That was a barbershop quartet, wasn't it, at some point? Anyway, Trump goes, Adam leaves closed committee hearings to illegally leak confidential information. Must be stopped. I think he's probably right. Adam Schiff is probably doing that. He's the ranking member of the Intelligence Committee, with Devin Nunez running the Intelligence Committee, the Republican. Since the Republicans have the majority, they run the committees. Now, Schiff is expected today to officially request that the Democratic memo be released. So that will end up going to Donald Trump. They'll call it for any names that shouldn't be exposed, you know, in intelligence, as they should. And I would suspect that the Democratic memo is going to end up, it'll go through Trump, but it will end up passing muster and away you go. And it'll be interesting to see what they think. Are they going to dispute the fact that in the Republican memo that was created by the people around Devin Nunez, that there was a conspiracy to bring a dossier to a surveillance court judge and tell him that this dossier was filled with important information on possible conspiracy between some of Trump's people and the Russians to throw the election. Now, they didn't apparently tell the judge that the dossier, not the memo, but the dossier, was created by a guy by the name of Steele, who hated Trump, and ended up letting it be sold to the Democrats for about $11 or $12 million. And the Democrats had Steele continue to fill this dossier with additional information. They then fed the dossier to the Justice Department. Did you know that? They fed that dossier to the Justice Department and the FBI. There was a guy in the FBI who was probably going to be in the hot seat, whose wife was directly involved with the Hillary Clinton campaign. Here's this guy. And They feed this dossier to the Justice Department, and they take the dossier created by this guy, Michael Steele, to slam and damn Donald Trump. And they take it to the judge, and they say, here, judge, look what this guy that works for Donald Trump is doing over in Russia. And look what Donald Trump did while he was in Russia. Did you see what he did while he was? So all of that, and apparently they don't tell him that the damn thing was created by Michael Steele and then funded by the Democrats and the Hillary Clinton people. Don't you think that you have to tell a surveillance judge before he renders a wiretap the truth? Now, the Democrats do not dispute any of that. Did you know that? They did not dispute any of that. So what are they going to say in their memo? Well, they're going to say this. The dossier was only one thing that we handed the judge. There was so much other evidence about wrongdoing. So much more. Well, then why did you even hand the judge the dossier? By the way, it's a court. There might have been more than one judge. But let's say the court. Why did you even hand the dossier to the court if you had all this other information that you would think would then allow the wiretap? So there you go. And we're getting down to this kind of he said, she said. Now, Mueller is supposed to be not investigating Trump. Mueller, the special prosecutor, he's supposed to be investigating whether the Russians did indeed intrude into our election. And according to both sides of the aisle, the Russians did. So we will probably get, yes, the Russians did. But in the meantime, let's be honest. The Mueller people are trying to find a way to get Trump indicted. They're trying to get him indicted. Mueller hired all of these pro-Hillary Clinton attorneys working around him. I don't think he hired any pro-Trump attorneys that I know of. Now, that doesn't sound fair and balanced. But that probe will continue. That probe will continue. However, if it turns out that indeed, as this memo from the Republicans say, that that warrant was secured under false pretenses, then all of this information on the wiretap of that guy whose name eludes me, all of the information on the wiretap at the Trump Tower and everything else would have to be thrown out. You could not use it because the wiretap would have been secured under false pretenses. Now, in the meantime, Chuck Schumer is demanding that Donald Trump make sure that that Democratic memo will be released. And he says they want it released in the interest of full transparency. And I think it should be. Absolutely. They made their plea, by the way, on, you know, they go on these Sunday shows and then I'm sure Chuck Schumer didn't even talk directly to Donald Trump, but he goes on one of the Sunday shows. And it's all turned political, right? Here's the thing mainly, though. We got a real scary issue if your Department of Justice is colluding with a political party to try to get rid of another guy who happens to be the president. If that's true that there are people in the Justice Department that are trying to get rid of Trump and they're building up phony charges, we got a story on our hands. And I think it would be worse than Watergate. It would be worse than Watergate. It would involve all the top people. Possibly Jim Comey, although we can't say that for sure. Possibly Mueller, the guy that's a special, he was the former FBI director, you know, before Comey, and they're buddies. Now, that doesn't mean that either one of them is involved in trying to overthrow Trump, but there are some people for sure that Mueller hired, including that guy Strzok and his girlfriend. They hated Trump. We've got all the texting about what they were going to do to make sure that Trump was going to fail, you know, and they're working on the case for Mueller? Okay. Enough about that. We're going to take our break. When we come back, We've got a great campus quackery at John Jay College in New York City.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life's struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
Hey, did you know there's a live psychology talk show Thursday and Friday at noon where you can call in and get free guidance and also learn several different topics relating to ending the stigma on mental health? It's called Moments of Clarity on WTAN 1340 AM. It's with licensed therapist Tiffany Warner, who will try to end the stigma on mental health. But the only way you can do that is to listen to Moments of Clarity Thursday and Friday at noon on WTAN 1340 AM, the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Misty Wells, your host of Let's Take It Outside. Join me every Friday, 5 p.m. on your ride home. We'll talk about getting outside, getting dirty, fishing, hunting, diving, and camping. Whatever you like to do when you take it outside. Spend your afternoons with me, Misty Wells, Friday, 5 o'clock, right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. Thank you so much again for being with us here on Freedom Works. We're going to be here Wednesday and Friday as well, so we hope you will join us as well then. Well, it is time for another Campus Quackery segment, and we're going to go to John Jay College in downtown New York. Now, downtown New York is not quackery, but quackery does go on in downtown New York. And here's the deal. Some students reacted negatively to a State of the Union speech, which was talking about such things as immigration, Islam, America's military strength. They reacted negatively to the quotes. One of them said, for instance, on the discussion of ISIS, well, ISIS is fake, the guy said. He said it's something the government made up so they can continue doing what they want to do, which is world domination. And then another one said, after hearing some of the quotes, the way that he approaches things, meaning Trump, is very aggressive, and that's not the best way to approach situations. They went on to say some of these things were just terrible that this guy Trump was saying. However, it turned out that the guy that was reading the quotes to them, his name was Cabot Phillips, was reading the quotes of Barack Obama in his State of the Union speech, but he didn't tell them that it was Obama's quotes. He didn't say anything. He said these were State of the Union quotes. So there you go. That kind of proves what everybody already realized. It doesn't make any difference. If you like the guy and you voted for him and you're of one particular persuasion, that guy can say anything he wants and you'll agree with him, generally, or want to agree with him. So here we are at John Jay College. Remember the other day we talked about, before the State of the Union speech, some guy on the street was asking people what they thought of the speech, and so many of them were condemning Trump as, oh, the speech was hateful. It's kind of like that, isn't it? And yet, you went to a university, you would think some of these people would understand. Those are the ones we're supposedly educating? Maybe we're not educating them very well. I'm not sure. And finally, before we get to the Super Bowl, because our guru, Big Ed, made a selection. We're going to talk about that. I want to talk about ESPN, Ed. There is a woman there by the name of Jemele Hill. Do you know who she is? Yeah. Did you know that she now says that She's gotten so much into Trump hate. She now says that he uses racial pornography to rally his voting base. She made the comments in an appearance on MSNBC, on Al Sharpton's show. She's going to get fired from ESPN. I don't know how they would keep somebody like that that would continue to say something. I don't care which president it was. What do you think? Crazy, isn't it?
I thought she was already pulled.
It says here she's a writer, ESPN writer.
Oh, the writer. Okay, I'm thinking the other one.
Jemele Hill.
Okay.
Yeah, but she's been doing this. It's ongoing with her. I don't know why ESPN would keep her. It's an embarrassment. Here's what she said. I think this is going to be a constant theme for the president. You were talking about kneeling during the national anthem. Remember, he's brought this up.
Right.
Okay. She says, because it's a very easy dog whistle. It's low-hanging fruit. It's what I like to call racial pornography because it's a way to stroke his base. On and on they go. I think ESPN has had a lot of trouble recently with everything.
Yeah, and they've cut a lot of people, so yes, she ought to watch out.
Exactly right.
Trimming payroll.
All right, sir. On to the Super Bowl with you. And you and I talked about it Friday, and you made, I thought, a very good selection in scoring and in choice. You picked New England to beat Philadelphia 27-23 in a close game. It turned out it was a close game. It was a very exciting game. However, we know that Philadelphia won the game 41-33. So, first of all, did you watch the game? Second of all, were you rooting for one team over the other, or did you change during the game? Let's start out with that. Then I'm going to ask you about some of the touchdowns and whether you thought they were legal.
I was rooting against Philadelphia, basically.
You were rooting for New England?
Yep.
Okay.
So, and just what I thought would happen, you know, with downtown Philly. I know they greased all the light poles, or they supposedly, they must have missed a few. Or they now they're just carrying their own anti-degreaser, the fans are, to ungrease the poles so they can climb them and jump off and knock themselves out.
I know, they were.
And why is it that celebrations translate to bash store windows and get free TVs?
Exactly. We were talking about that at the beginning of the show. It's absolute. What is the thinking? I think it's a self-dislike. But getting back to the game. Exciting game. Now, there were two touchdowns, I believe, that Philadelphia scored. Or you tell me. Where there was a question among the color commentator and the announcer as to whether or not, as he crossed the goal line, whether or not he then moved the ball a little bit in his hand before he hit the ground and all of that.
Well, the difference is if that would have been a catch out of to toe tap and then be out of bounds, he would have had to have maintained control. But the fact that it was in bounds and in the middle of the field, he took two steps, he became a runner.
So the guy was crossing the goal line,
right.
And at that point he had already caught the ball and would turn, and now was just running with the ball.
He was running with the ball. He took two steps. He became a runner. Once the ball crosses the plane, it's done.
Okay, but if he had been a receiver and he was just catching the ball before he went out of bounds, if he was maneuvering the ball in his hand at that
would not have been a catch.
Okay. Did you feel that the game was that fair? Do you think that the
I think it was. I think it kind of evens itself out. There was nothing that was really glaring that saying, oh, it could have won the game for us.
What'd you think about the coaching tactics of both the Philadelphia coach?
I think it was big when Philly went for that fourth down play in their own, you know, their own side of the field. That was big.
Yeah. It started out, the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles was had his quarterback throwing right from the get-go. That was the very first thing. And it seemed like he was kind of gung-ho all the way through with his offensive scheme.
Yeah, and talk about Nick Foles, the quarterback. I mean, he came in on week 11, I believe it was. So he played five regular season games and
he
now
looked
three.
Like he was as good as Tom Brady.
Guess who's going to get a fat contract and somebody's going to offer him a lot of money.
And guess who's not going to come back and be their quarterback?
What about that
poor guy?
Wentz will come back.
Oh,
yeah.
He will?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that's their future. He's 23. Nick Foles is 29.
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. There's no question.
So what happens to Foles?
Foles will become, I believe he becomes a free agent. Oh,
he ain't going to sit on the bench.
I'd be surprised if he's not signed by somebody in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think you're right.
He's probably going to make triple what he's making now.
All right. It's time for our top 10. Ed is running over and scurrying over to the drums in the corner there. He brings the mic with him, by the way. because we've got the top 10 biggest Super Bowl underdog winners, Ed. Now, what we mean by that is most points favoring a particular team and then the score. Do you know what I mean? So if somebody was favored by 20 points and they lost by 20, that's a 40. That's a minus 40, and that would be a big blowout. Okay, here we go. Top 10 biggest Super Bowl underdog winners. Number 10. It was Super Bowl 32. It was the Denver Broncos who were underdogs, 11-point underdogs to the Green Bay Packers, and they beat Green Bay 31-24. So that is an 18-point slide. Number 9. Denver, and I didn't put the Super Bowl number down, but it was Denver 24, Carolina 10, and Carolina was favored by 4.5 points. They lost by 14. 18.5-point swing. Number 8. Super Bowl 45, New Orleans 31, Indianapolis 17. Did you know Indy was favored by 5? And they lost 31-17. Number 7. Had dropped one of the sticks. Number 7 is Super Bowl 15, Ed. In this game, Philadelphia was favored by 3 over Oakland, and the final score was 27-10, Oakland. A 20-point swing. Number 6. Super Bowl 3. Do you remember what Super Bowl 3 was, Ed?
No, I don't think
I remember. Gonna... Broadway Joe Namath?
I do.
Okay. The Jets beat the Baltimore Colts 16-7. Did you know that the Colts were 18-point favorites? 18-point favorites. And that's a 27-point swing. Number 5. The next Super Bowl. Number 5, the next Super Bowl. Minnesota, 12-point favorite over the Kansas City Chiefs. It was Kansas City 23, Minnesota 7. Number 4. Super Bowl 37. Guess which one that one was, Ed? You should know.
That'd be the Bucks.
You are right, sir. Did you know Oakland was a 4-point favorite?
Mm-hmm.
And Tampa wins that one 48-21. Number 3. Super Bowl 18. The Washington Redskins were 3-point favorites, and the Raiders beat them 38-9. Do you remember that game?
It was in Tampa Stadium.
Yes, indeed. Very good. Number two. Super Bowl 22. Denver was favored by 3 points. Guess what? Washington beat them 42-10. 42-10.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And finally, Ed, you know what the number one biggest underdog winner was?
Oh, I don't know. Probably one of the early games.
Actually, it wasn't. It was 47, I think. Yes. Super Bowl 47, if I've got my Roman numerals correct. Denver was favored by 2 points over Seattle. And Seattle won 43-8.
Yeah.
You remember that game?
Mm-hmm.
43-8. That's a 37-point swing. Now, last night, I think New England was favored by 4.5.
Yeah.
So what was that swing? What's our math tell us that swing was? 41-33, 8 plus a 12.5-point swing. It would not have made our top 10. That's the way it goes. All right, my friends. Thank you so very much for being with us. We will be back on Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, remember, freedom works.